Hello and welcome to Season 1, a podcast where two best friends watch, review, and recommend television series that only lasted one season. My name is Andrew.
And my name is Presley.
And this week we are going to be reviewing American Born Chinese. But first, before that, Presley, how are you doing, man? What's going on?
You know, I've been having a mixed bag of late, but I will fill in our listeners. I went to Greece recently on a family vacation trip, which was absolutely wonderful. Zero complaints. Would recommend Greece to anyone to go and visit. So if you have the opportunity to go to that wonderful country, I would strongly recommend it. Other than that, my life is extremely boring. And just fun little note, since we referred to it a few episodes back, I don't know if it was last episode or the episode before, but in terms of my reading habits, I have read a total of 21 books in the last month and a half. So I've been on a reading bender. So that's been a lot of fun. And much to your chagrin, a friend of ours, friend of the podcast, Kendra, and I have been discussing it ad nauseum to everyone else when we hang out, dismay. So that's what's been going on in my life. What about you?
You know, same old, same old.
Yeah.
Busy, yet somehow we don't ever have anything planned. So tell me how that works out.
I couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Just started, dog training today with the younger of the pups, Sansa, 'cause she's a little naughty. And no, we just need to work on some stuff there. So we're excited. It was really funny because if you know her, which a lot of our listeners might not, but basically she's like this crazy, like super like lovey, energetic dog. But when she's in a scenario or a situation that she doesn't know, like the vet or like in training, she was the most perfectly behaved, like very demure, very mindful, very cutesy, like just literally sitting there being so perfect.
That's so interesting.
Everybody's thinking like, why the fuck is she even here? I'm gonna send them a video of when she tries to bite my face off.
Completely rambunctious. I think my dog McFly is very similar to that, where like we go to the vet and he's like, people are like, is he okay? Like, he seems too calm. Did you drug him up? And I'm like, nope, that's just kind of the way he is. But then we go to the dog park and he's like barking his head off to get the ball. And, you know, he's not ill behaved. He's just too excited.
Yeah.
He has like these very two distinct personalities in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, to be fair, that's like, cute that, you know, Sansa is not like super poorly behaved. It's just kind of like the human management part of dog training that we've we've got into cycles of like commands and things that we need to work on so that she understands better, right? So that's been kind of consuming our lives. We only had one session, it was today, but I mean like preparing for that, thinking about that, talking about
it's a process,
you know. Yeah. It's a whole thing. So
and it's one that I've even like with my dog have had to like reevaluate, like,
yeah,
oh, you're not listening as well as you used to, even if we're doing all the same stuff. Now we got to go back and redo some of these trainings and relearn. Yep. And, you know, it's just kind of an iterative process over many years, honestly.
Totally.
But good for you, good for Sansa.
Yeah.
Before we get into the description of everything, I think that every single time that this happens on the show, we need to call it out so that people will listen to us. Make intros for your fucking shows.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of not having fun intros for shows. Like the last like six shows we watch have had essentially nothing. The last one I can remember was like Constellation, which had a good intro.
It's like a lost art.
I know. It truly is a lost art. It bums me out. I feel like that's another piece of merch we should add. Like bring back TV intros, you know, like good TV. Like think about how like Game of Thrones would not be as good if you didn't have the like, I don't even like Game of Thrones, and I like the like Westeros theme like of the start of it, right? Like,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean. And it makes me sad.
Well, I think of the National Treasure show as well. Like that was such a
good mood.
Yeah, exactly. It was like the perfect intro for what unfortunately was like a pretty bad show, but like that intro was so well done and so perfect. It got me hyped to watch the show, even though I didn't like it.
Yeah, I think so much about like the little associations like to certain theme songs and introductions to things that we have, like even separate from television shows. Like imagine if at the beginning of the first Star Wars film in 1977, there was none of that like big loud blaring music with the Star Wars logo, and then it eased into the title crawl with the music like swelling over it, and it was just like dead silence. Like, how much that would kill any, like, there's no momentum to begin with, and you don't have anything. And so it's like, you know, or like the iconicness of so many of these like little subtle TV show things, you know, even back to Freaks and Geeks, it's like such a simple thing of like picture day under bad reputation, but like, it's so iconic, and you can show that to anybody or even play that song for a lot of people, and they're like, oh man, that makes me think of Freaks and Geeks, right? Totally. And it makes me sad. So studios, if you're listening, I'm sure you're not, because you would probably hate all of our opinions, but
or they please... would like DMCA us somehow or something.
Yeah, right. well, they can't, because we're not using any of their audio or any of their... we're just talking about their shows. They don't have intros for us to use. But please put some time in intros. I know people skip them, but a lot of us really like it.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep bringing this up every single time it's a thing. I'm just going to warn our listeners now.
All right. Synopsis, whenever you're ready, my friend.
American Born Chinese was a Disney Plus original show that aired back in 2023. The show follows high schooler Jim Wong as he begins the 10th grade. While trying to balance the normal work and home difficulties of everyday life being a high schooler, he is asked to help a new student, exchange student essentially, get acquainted with a school, Wei Chen, played by Jimmy Liu. Wei Chen is actually the son of the great sage Sun Wukong, played by Daniel Wu, who rules over heaven and is known as the Monkey God. Wei Chen has stolen his father's mystic staff and is on a quest to seek the mysterious fourth scroll, an artifact of legend which contains unknown powers. Guided by the goddess of mercy, played by Michelle Yeoh, Wei Chen believes that Jin is his guide to finding the scroll, which he saw in a dream, which in finding the scroll will help thwart an uprising that is happening in heaven against his father, spearheaded by the bull demon king, played by Leonard Wu. Throughout various incidents and scrapes and battles, the staff is lost by Wei Chen and ends up in the hands of the bull demon, who is intent on using it, along with the fourth scroll, to end the world as we know it. Together with his friends, Jin is able to lure the shape-shifting deep bull demon out of hiding during a important soccer match, resulting in Jin jumping in the way of the blast that would essentially destroy Earth and expand the kingdom of heaven. Miraculously unharmed, Jin is revealed to be the fourth scroll himself. As they've said, the fourth scroll can be literally anything.
Yeah.
And they are able to, using Jin's power, stop the bull demon's uprising, and the gods return to heaven. Jin returning home after the soccer game, Jin's parents are missing, and he doesn't know where they are. And he turns around in his home to find a mysterious woman saying that if he wants to see his parents unharmed again, that he must go with her. We don't know who she is or what she wants or anything like that. But that is the end of the show. Left on a pretty big cliffhanger.
Well said and absolutely correct. It was a huge cliffhanger.
Yeah, I thought it was, one of the monkey gods, Wukong's, hench people that we see throughout. There's like a woman when they do this arcade fight that has like these dual curved blades, and I thought it was her, but it's definitely not. After I was like checking, because they like conduct themselves very similarly in the scenes.
That's I also got confused for a sec.
And I presumably it's some other god who wants to, now knowing that he's the fourth scroll, use him for some nefarious purpose or something,
for sure.
Who knows.
Yeah.
But that is the show. That's all we got of it. Andrew, I'm really excited to hear what you thought about this show.
I'm excited to get into it. So
you sound really excited.
You know what? I didn't hate this show. I know I hate every show that we watch, and
it's almost a prerequisite at this point.
I didn't hate the show. I think I had some problems with it, and I think I liked some things with it. So things that I liked. I thought the fight and stunt choreography was great. It was impeccable. It felt like an old school, like classic kung fu movie in like such a great way.
The best way.
It was just so highly entertaining and engaging that I was like, yes, please fight. You know, I was like, please fight. This is so awesome.
It was what I was looking forward to every episode.
Yeah. I thought that this is kind of a mixed bag one for me, but I liked that there was a lot of Chinese. Like, these characters...
In dialogue, you mean.
In dialogue. Like, correct, yeah. They're, like, some of these people, they're basically thousands or millions or whatever years old, and they're, like, ancient Chinese gods. And it was great to see them, not for us, make it accessible and have them only speak English. There was a lot of Chinese dialogue. It felt very authentic and very true to the characters. Like, these people, these gods are like millions of years old and they know each other. They're going to speak in their native dialect and they have history. And so I thought that was great. And the other side of that was that at times there were so much subtitles that I sort of glazed over a little bit.
Yeah, you can kind of zone out.
Yeah, and or missed a lot of the visuals, because this is also a very, very visual movie or show. And that feels like kind of an obvious thing to say, like, no shit, it's TV. But there's a lot of, like, very strong visual cues that you have to pick up on to, like, see the other part of the story that they're trying to tell. And I feel like I just missed that or had to be like, wait, what just happened a few times and or quite a few times. And I think that was... So that's why I say it's like a good and a bad, because I really love that they were authentic to the characters and to like telling the story. And it's about an American kid who's, you know, he's Chinese and there's like a lot of history behind his both sides of his family and along as well with the son Wukong and Wei Chen and all of that. So but then one more good that I think is a little out of left field, but maybe not. I think I really liked that Jin ended up with the girl that he originally wanted to be with or really liked. Yeah. I think that cute. It's such
I love
a,
that little romance plot.
Yeah,
personally.
Me too.
I thought it was genuinely really sweet.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It feels like such a common trope, especially when your main character is not white, for them to want this like white chick that's like inaccessible or like in the popularity group or popular group
and they're
whatever.
Maybe the unpopular crowd
and they're like in the unpopular crowd, like it's such different. A tired trope, right? And
I agree.
Like, oh, you would never be able to like get with her because she's popular or this that, but like really there was just a genuine interest between the two of them. And like, so what I feel like usually happens that didn't happen here, which I made a prediction and I was wrong and I'm glad for it, was that usually what happens is, let's say, you know, so Jin is Chinese and he likes this. I wouldn't even say, I'm not going to speculate what her ethnicity was, but I'm just going to say she was white, right? She seemed was white. Yep. Her parents were white. So you know, we'll just go with that. So he likes this white girl. And then there was the other Asian gal who was like leading the protests and stuff and all
she's,
that.
She runs like the Asian club at the school. And she says that she's Japanese at one point.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So basically I feel like what happens is you see the main character Chinese here likes this white girl and it's like, oh, she's too good for you. She's too out of your league, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you end up with a girl that quote unquote is right for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're of the same like ethnicity or like group, right? Yeah. And I like that they didn't do that, because interracial relationships are great. They're fine. They're okay. Like I just liked that there was some representation for that.
Yeah.
Because there usually isn't, right? Like every single show that I feel like I watch that talks about race or deals with that, they end up with someone outside of an interracial relationship, even though the main plot or one main plot point is that they like someone who is not of their same race. I don't know. I just like that it didn't fall into that same trope.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with you. And not only does it not like fall into the same trope, but this show has a lot to say and a lot of commentary to offer around a lot of stereotypical like Asian in media tropes.
Yeah.
And there's several, like there are characters that I didn't mention in the synopsis that only exists to
comment
kind
on
of,
that.
Yeah. Comment on that. Yeah. Right. And so the fact that there's never one single point in the entire interactions of these two characters, our main character, Jin, and I want to say it's Mackenzie. I forget the
Amelia.
Amelia. Thank you. I think maybe the actress is named that. Anyway, the fact that it never once comes up, like he kind of like low-key asks her out really early. And she's just like, I don't know if I feel that way, right? It's not like, oh, because you're, you know, Asian or because of anything else. It's just like, I don't really necessarily know you that well. And yeah. I just want to be buds. And he's like, okay. And he takes it fine, right?
Yeah.
And then she comes back around after they've spent a lot of time together and they've actually gotten to know one another and develop a sincere understanding of their themselves that they like come back around and is like, hey, I know I said this thing earlier, but like I've changed my mind and I would like to if you would still. Right. And then they, you know, yeah. show this sweet little kiss and it's, you know, it's like 10th grade love, right? Like it's,
yeah,
it's sweet and it's sincere and it's not meant to be anything other than cute. And I really appreciate that. And I think yeah. it speaks to exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Going back to your other thing, my favorite part is the wire work of everything. You can tell, like in old school, especially Chinese Kung Fu, various, mm-hmm. you know, older films, and very easily comparable is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which stars Michelle Yeoh. You have a lot of great wire work in those old school movies, of all different type, like Chinese, Japanese, Korean, it's all over the place. And so hearkening back to all those fight sequences, like, there's moments where they're like one person's just standing on the wall while the other person's standing on the ground and they're just fighting as if they're both standing on the ground. And it's like those fun little things where they're gods. They should be able to kind of manipulate the terrain in whatever means they like. And
there's the point where Bull Demon and Wei Chen are just like flying and fighting.
They're just like Dragon Ball Z. Okay, they just can fly now. You know, like,
yeah.
And somebody is like, wait, is like the coach, because all of this big confrontation at the end happens in front of like the whole school, right? And people, they present it as it's the cosplay club, like putting on a performance prior to the soccer match that's about to start, because all the clubs are doing like mini performances. And of course, the principal, who has been shown to be like very inept and very stupid the whole show, thinks it's just like, oh, it's so good, like I don't know how they did like, this, oh, but it's God, so exciting, so
talented.
It's so much better than last year's. Meanwhile, it's like literal gods like fighting for the fate of all of existence, you know. And it's sweet, and it's always played seriously from one perspective and always played silly from the other, and it works for the show because it doesn't, the show itself is not taking itself too seriously. It understands it's an adaptation of a comic book, of a graphic, I don't know if it's a graphic novel or a comic book, doesn't really matter. It knows to lean into the camp a little bit more, to lean into the silliness a little bit more, but then also having really like serious punchy moments, not fighting punchy, but like punchy emotional or like deeper moments that I think really won my heart over for the show.
Yeah. It sounded like you really liked it. Tell me why.
Couple of things, right? Like, I think from a like writing perspective, I like the novelty of the story, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't another iteration of like a Percy Jackson, right? Where it's like the Greek gods or something like that, right? Or the Roman gods or whatever, right? It's new characters that I, growing up in the U.S. and being white, have not had experience with. I don't know, even from my own, like, not like just generally, I don't know if these are completely wholly made up characters or if they're from Asian folklore or whatnot.
Sun Wukong is actually like a super legendary figure in Chinese literature.
Cool.
Huge part of like Chinese literature and folklore and that kind of thing.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah, clearly there's precedent for these characters, and even if they're making modern twists and spins on it, right? It's like, I love new things, right? Like, it's one of the big things that you and I, even off the podcast, will talk about, of like, we like novel new stories rather than rehashes and repeats of new things, right? And so I really liked this new presentation. I like that it didn't hold my hand to try and explain the things that are not really understandable to me.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for instance, when it's revealed that Wei Chen is this son of a god, right? And he needs Jin's help to find the scroll. They don't spend a whole episode with him like reeling and freaking out and trying for like Wei Chen to justify his existence or like prove to him that he's really a god. He just kind of accepts it. And then they just move on. And he's like, okay, I'll help you on your quest, right? Because clearly you need me. And I like that like kind of adultiness to it. Like they're 10th graders or whatever. They're younger people. Mm-hmm. But I like that the show trusts the audience to understand the stakes of the situation without having to like beat you over the head with them. And is also then subsequently telling like really more nuanced adult stories along with like kind of fun kid stories of like mm-hmm. his parents going through like really challenging times financially and like within their marriage, right? And the story of Ki-hi Kwan's character, who shows up in several episodes and has become like this kind of problematic meme within the culture of the show, who is again not connected to anything but just shows up to kind of inform the audience about the importance of like representation in television. And I just love that it was really able to blend those things really well, from my own like watching perspective. Okay. I think that dovetails into our favorite question, which is, who is this show made for? Unfortunately, yeah. Because like, just like you were saying, it's a huge flaw. As much as you and I might really enjoy when in shows like this or The Brother Son, they actually lean into the native dialect and the language, a 8-year-old, a 12-year-old is not going to sit through a show that's all subtitles in a different language. It's extremely rare. I'm not going to say that they won't, right?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of can, like we're saying, even us as adults who are invested can get a little glassy-eyed, not necessarily focus in, because it does take away from the visuals. You are focused on the reading. You are focused on what's being said, not missing anything. And mm-hmm. so, like, not to bemoan the show, because I think it was actually a really bold thing for them to do, I can understand why, like, potentially the show wasn't renewed by virtue of, like, it doesn't really fit into any one given audience.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting because that last sentence you said is not be fit to, like, any one specific audience. That's normally a good thing. You know, that like we talk about, I've been having this conversation with people there's been a small like tiff or a row in the house between myself and my partner Leanne about like what the definition of a classic movie is.
Oh,
like what makes a classic movie a classic movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Versus like a personally nostalgic movie. Yeah. But so one of my things for that is like a classic has to kind of break through genre or break through normal audience for that. And so usually if we see something that's very well built to be accessible to multiple audiences, usually that's a good thing, right? Usually the shows we watch here are very tunnel visioned on a specific audience.
Yes.
Right. And so you have like, if the 8 to 10-year-olds who are really into like fantasy aren't into this show, then it's going to get canceled. Right.
I agree.
actually has, as you just said, it doesn't really like fit or try to fit to a specific audience. It feels pretty accessible.
I agree.
In the idea and the concept of it, but then the subtitles reel that back a little too significantly, maybe, for people's attention to really stay. Because
and I think just adding on to your point, like also some of the narratives, like some of the story elements also do that in conjunction with the language barrier. Yeah, right. So totally. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. And so it's interesting because I was thinking about who is this for, and it feels accessible, but at the same time, as you mentioned, it with some of the story beats and then also like the heavy subtitles and kind of some of the pieces about like the culture of it just kind of like whittle it back down to something a little more narrow. And I feel like that was a little unfortunate, but you can't do this show right like this and not do that. It's just a byproduct of doing the show like authentic to the characters they were portraying.
Yeah.
And that's fine for me, honestly.
Yeah, I wonder if this show is a victim of its own streaming service, where if this show was not on like Disney Plus, which is which tends to, you know, they have some broad sets of stuff, and especially now that they've like integrated Hulu, right? Yeah. There's like R-rated, you know, more risque stuff on Disney Plus, but if this show had come out on some other major streaming service like an Amazon Prime or, you know, Apple TV Plus or something else, right, where it's less narrow casted to, I think, like a younger audience, like we associate with a lot of the Disney Plus shows, even if, again, it's not true, it's just like the guilty by association of that, then could this have been a slightly more successful iteration of this, because you would have had, you know, a slightly more elderly viewpoint, you know, hitting the teenagers, hitting the young adults, hitting even our own age as we're, you know, fully adults now, right? Like 30s, 40s. It is kind of hard when you're telling the story of like 10th graders and wanting to probably court some of that audience, but then you do have these like long scenes of his dad working with his boss, spending time commiserating about their love of Bon Jovi, you know, yeah. And it's a nice scene, but like you as, let's say, a 10th grader cannot connect with that meaningfully. Yeah. I don't believe, right? Maybe some can, but it again, it's just too narrow of a field, even if we ourselves can enjoy it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point about the platform or the service, the streaming service that it was on.
Because I do think it matters a lot.
It does matter a lot because I think, like, I don't have the demographic data. I'm not going to go find it and get into the weeds of it, but I would argue
that... Well, and a lot of places aren't even releasing it anymore.
Yeah, and that's also probably not very accessible. But I would imagine, and it seems pretty reasonable to say that Disney's demographic group... like who has Disney Plus and is looking for new shows on Disney Plus right. is much more narrow than Apple TV Plus or Netflix or Hulu or Amazon. And so I think you're absolutely
right. Yeah, I tend
right.
to agree like, with that.
The demographic of their consumer base is much narrower. And so it makes it hard for this to be put in front of people that wouldn't normally look for something on Disney Plus. So
yeah.
I think it's a good point.
Yeah, and we have yet to see the delineation with, like, you know, at least Netflix, they have, like, Netflix for Kids, where it's, like, very, very specifically kids-centered content.
Right.
And then you have normal Netflix, where you can still see all that kids stuff, but you're open to the broadest possible options. Yeah. And so I think, like, Disney Plus doesn't have that. It probably will need that at some point, and I know that there's, like, parental restrictions and stuff that you can do now that they've, like, integrated the Hulu stuff into it.
Yeah.
But I just think it's interesting, and it's one of those things where it feels so obvious to me. Like, anybody watching the show could pick up on that inherent conflict that exists within the show to be about who it's for. And I think, like, it also, to a good extent, narrows itself to try and tell an actual really rich story of, like, Asian culture and representation within media and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But... I don't think that audience is necessarily big enough to justify the renewal and continuation of the show. As much as it is totally worthy to exist and has an audience, I just don't think, like, if we're thinking about, like, the numbers that these streaming services think about, they're not going to see that uptick enough to be like, well, let's spend another $400,000 per episode on the show or whatever, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, 100%. What were some things you didn't like about the show? Like, I actually took the time to write a list so I remember the things that I didn't love. And if you need some time to think, I can start on mine. I'll start on mine. And maybe this will turn some...
Yeah, I think I do need a second to think about it.
Yeah.
I think I had fewer than you do, probably. And so maybe you going over a couple will kind of jog my memory. I can think of a few, though.
Yeah, I have a few. And they're not necessarily, like, big, but they're just, like, minor tweaks that I think would have made this... a little more accessible, right?
Totally.
In the way that we kind of just discussed this show may not be. One of them is, so Ki Hui Kwan had basically a complete side story in the whole thing, which Presley, you kind of already touched on, but basically he was in a show in the 80s or 90s, early 90s, that was basically like a super exaggerated, like, racist version of an Asian guy. So he was just like, he was basically just a joke in the show. He was a punchline where he was just like, his character was like very exaggerated.
Yep.
And like very stereotypical, like what, you know, white America would think of, like, how an Asian person is. It was just like, did I do something wrong or, you know, whatever. It's in this, like, this very, like, strong, thick accent. And that was really
that
all
he
that
actually
his,
have,
that he doesn't actually have. And that was, like, what they made him do in the show. And that was, like, his entire contribution to the show. And they went through and showed him being, like, a handyman and things like that now, because, you know, the royalty checks can only go so far, et cetera, and everybody else is, like, got careers and is super famous and all this kind of stuff. And they built a really strong dialogue and a good dialogue around, like, basically around, like, an Asian person being the hero, being the main conversation of a show and, like, having something more to be a part of a series than to be, like, a token.
I didn't walk away from acting. I just walked away from Hollywood.
Interesting. And why is that?
Well, after the show ended, I thought, you know, a lot of opportunities would have opened up, just like the way it did for a lot of people.
Yeah. The industry can be hard on everyone.
Sweetie, I think he was talking about us.
No, no, it's not just you. It's the whole system. The only parts that I got offered were nerds and neighbors. And sometimes ninjas.
And what kinds of roles were you looking for at the time?
I mean, I wanted to play the hero. It's every kid's dream, right?
So you're saying the people at Batman never called?
You know, I teach classical theater to college kids, and we talk about character a lot. When I say I wanted to play a hero, I mean, I just wanted to be someone who goes on a journey, shows some courage, helps others. A hero can be a person with superpowers, or they can just be, can be someone who fights for something that matters. My parents were heroes. But as I said, people like that weren't on TV back then.
Well, hopefully that's changing.
I hope so. And I hope that there's a kid out there watching this who feels he doesn't have to be a punchline, who believes that he could be the hero.
Yep. And I thought that was fantastic. I really did like that.
It's arguably the best thing in the entire show.
Yes, I would agree. But yeah, in that same vein, it felt superfluous. It felt extra.
I completely agree. And this is the one thing I was going to bring up after, like even before you started talking. I was like, yeah, go ahead.
And so it felt like it didn't, it added a layer of the message that they're trying to get across with this show. And I think it aided in that effort, but it took too much away from telling the story that we're supposed to be watching and be invested in.
Yes.
Because while it didn't have, while it wasn't like half American born Chinese and half this character's like life story, they definitely had moments where there was something developing in the show and they cut to this, or they would start an episode off a cliffhanger from the previous episode and right. show, you know, Jamie Yao, which is the character that Ki Hui yep. Kwan plays, performing his life, talking about something, thinking about something, showing like regret or, you know, dissatisfaction with the way his life turned out after having, you know, a part in such a big series. And then at the end, when Jin has this premonition dream sequence,
yeah.
Jamie Yao comes out in the middle of this out of nowhere and just says, he basically repeats a line that he mentions in an interview that they do when they talk about rebooting the show that they were on.
Yeah.
Or basically like says, episode. Yeah, they do like a reunion interview thing and they might reboot the show. But Jamie Yao says, like, a hero doesn't have to have powers, and talks, has this very great monologue
yep.
About representation in film and TV, which is fantastic. But that little line where, you know, heroes don't always have to have powers, basically his character serves to just pop into that end of the line or into the end of that, like figuring out
moment,
right? Into the end of that moment where he tells Jin, heroes don't have to have powers. And then Jin like jumps over the staff, does this thing to block the staff from creating this tear between the dimensions and destroying everything or whatever.
Yep.
I think all of that was very extra and unnecessary. And that's yep. unfortunate because it was so great. But it's simple, like his father, who this whole time was being kind of berated by their mom or by his mom, and always kind of given flack about not striving for more, not fighting for more, not wanting to be more at his job, and not, you know, basically like he used to be this very vibrant, very like energetic, very go-getter type of guy, and he now has a family that has to provide for, and he is focused on making sure that he can continue to provide rather than I want to be the next CEO of this company, right?
Yeah, trying to push for a promotion but being too kind of scared to do so.
Exactly. And so, you know, a far more impactful moment for me after some of the character development that they showed with the father would have been for him to turn to his son and say, not all heroes, not all great men or great people have to have powers. You could be a regular person and be a great person.
Yeah.
Right? That for me, as far as the way the story goes, would have been much more impactful.
I think like it's interesting because he's just going along with your point, like, his dad is coming to that conclusion at the same time. And there's a lot of like parallelisms in the stories of his parents to his own story.
Yep.
And I think like the show wanted to have that, what the message that you were outlining as the show continued on and didn't have enough runway to do so because it was canceled and because it's only these 8 episodes. Cause I agree with you. I think it would have been a much stronger message to see that coming from his parents who to him are kind of jokes, and not in like a mean way, just in like the same way that like an angsty teenager views a lot of their parents, right? Like, you know, they exist to embarrass you and to stop.
I mean, even Amelia feels that way about her parents, and Jin is like jealous and is like, wow, I wish my parents would be like that, right? Like,
it's just that classic thing where you neither direct, like her mom is nothing but supportive and appreciative of her, and she regards it as like false. She like wants more criticality, right? And then and Jin's parents are really critical of him and very. Rarely, you know, that kind of genuine supporting this. And so like all that stuff's great. And I think we would have seen the, you know, this is getting early into our like season 2 predictions or whatever, but like, I think you're right that we would have seen that revelation come through to his dad as they continued, because he does start to do some of the things that are like taking charge and being that more affirmative character, right? Like he goes to, they lose this kind of precious family heirloom necklace at one point because the various gods believe it could be the fourth scroll, right? Yep. And it's this orange jade and normal jade, like green jade necklace that interlock together from like an ancient prophecy that is again foretold by the scrolls. And they go to look for it after it's been quote unquote lost. It's actually been stolen by Wei Chen and then subsequently another character. And he's like trying to muster his like, you know, support to try and do it. And he kind of does the Karen-y thing of going to the manager of the restaurant that they were at when they realized they lost it. And then he just gets like his ass kind of handed to him in terms of the interaction where like the guy doesn't give him an inch and he's really rude to him and is not willing to kind of give it up. And that's like the last, you know, ember of us seeing the potential of his like, you know, growth in that moment. And it kind of falls flat. But they do end up then helping Wukong without even realizing it because he's been injured in the basement. Yeah. And in them searching for it, they help Wukong. And Wukong reveals an interesting thing to them where saying, like, our children are our mirrors for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And then he has this really great moment where they're in the car and they're just kind of sitting very, very saddened by having not found the necklace and bemoaning the person who they don't realize is a god. But, you know, they just think is a guy down on his luck who... You know, they say like, you know, every time I look at Jin, I know that you and I are going to be okay because he is our mirror and I know that Jin's okay. Right. And so it's like this great moment where, again, if you just gave them a little bit more time, you gave them more screen time, you added more information, especially now that they might be kidnapped by the gods in the next season, you can develop exactly what you're talking about. And I think that Ki Kwai Kwan's character was introduced because they realized they didn't have enough time. They needed someone who could get to the point a little bit faster, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I would have preferred a show, two different shows. One is like the show we got removing his character, and then a different show, which is like this deep drama meditation on like success and careers and like literally his whole monologue, which I might include it in the episode if I can find the audio from it, because it's genuinely really good when he's on this reunion episode of his show. Is like literally the story of the actual actor. It's like almost taken from 100%. Some of his interviews and conversations. And it's genuinely profound and heartwarming. and very real, and him talking about his own parents being the real heroes for giving him the opportunity to be able to act and to be able to be in the show. And even if he kind of regrets his involvement in the show this far down the line, he still recognizes the importance of him having been able to have the chance to be on the show right when he did. Like, I was given an opportunity that a lot of folks who look like me are not given. And even if he doesn't like that, right, he still recognizes like the limitation and also the advantage that that gave him. All of his stuff is like phenomenal, and it's just out of place, which is the unfortunate part that we're talking about, right? It's like this really great nugget of great social commentary that is like shoehorned into this kind of a lot sillier, irreverent, 10th grader story of, saving the world,
Yeah. Yeah. In tandem with the comment you made about not having enough time and Ki Hui Kwan's whole side
deal
show is that the backstory episode, I think it was the fourth episode. Fourth or fifth episode. Basically, they show a flashback of Sun Wukong and Bull Demon being friends and how they basically kind of came to fracture their relationship and came to the positions they're in. That whole episode felt completely wasted to me.
I agree.
It was very cool to see some of like them being gods and being in heaven and all of that kind of thing, but Wukong's ascension to the Great Sage doesn't matter. And
in the greater narrative of
in the greater narrative being told. Precisely. And Bull Demon's motivations, while they do matter to us because we want to know the character development there, they could have shown us in a different way that Wukong and Bull Demon had a relationship where they were best friends, and they could have shown us in a different way that Bull Demon was felt betrayed and felt betrayed by heaven to become what he was and try to take it all down. There are so many other ways they could have done that. And I feel like the episode they gave us wasn't even strong enough to really sell it anyway. And so if you take that episode out, you take Ki Hui Kwan's whole separate show and you take that out of it, then you have at least like two episodes worth of time.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah. To fill out things like rolling into my next thing.
Yeah.
The whole idea of Bull Demon's strategy being tied in with the manga.
Yeah. Which so, is very underdeveloped. You're right.
Completely underdeveloped. Like, it's almost like it's, I don't feel like it's really a MacGuffin, but it kind of feels like one. Basically in this development of like the story and Bull Demon getting power and all of this, Wei Chen and Jin realize, because they're fans of the same manga.
Yeah.
They realize, oh, Bull Demon actually is represented in this manga, and the strategies that the bad guy is using in the manga is what Bull Demon is using. And this is like, we've already seen this happen. We can anticipate what Bull Demon will do.
Yep.
And they mention the manga. They mention this action figure that Wei Chen had that he gave to Jin and all of this a couple times very loosely. It felt important in the beginning, and then six other episodes happened, and then it didn't matter at all in those. Yeah, all of a sudden, right, toward the end, it was, oh, the manga is telling us what is happening. And so they could have taken a lot of that time away from the pieces that didn't add to the actual story we're supposed to be experiencing, and gave us
really good observation, honestly. I didn't think about that.
It just gave us a more, so that we understand and we believe the story a little more, even understand the magic of things more. I mean, I feel like I really don't understand, and I realize that there's probably a lot to their universe and in heaven, because there's like all sorts of different gods and everything, but give us more of that. Explain more to us. Have Wei Chen be telling stories more to Jin to make him understand the world that they're trying to save, and show us more about this manga connection, and show us more about the strategy that's happening and them trying to fix the problem.
Yeah. It's once again, one of those situations that we've pondered a couple times. And even recently, I wonder if this show was 10 episodes and they had to cut it down to 8.
Very well could have been. I'd believe it. I would believe it.
Because you don't feel like there's anything missing, but you do feel exactly to your point that there's like stuff that maybe was filmed or dialogue that happened or these kinds of things that we as the audience don't get to see.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, oh, well, we only got funding for 8 episodes, so we have to leave a bunch on the cutting room floor. And from a main story perspective, you're not actually losing anything like from the continuity or you're not like cutting a very important scene, right? But you're losing the nuance of what you're talking about, right? Like this important aspect of the show that is illuminated very early on, forgotten about, and then re-brought back. Maybe there's stuff in the middle that was cut out of them continuing to progress on this kind of storyline.
Mm-hmm. Or just read manga together and be friends like the whole time.
Yeah, literally.
Wei Chen or Jin is just avoiding Wei Chen and avoiding being friends with him, even though they are friends.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to the frustration that I think lingers on both of our opinions of this show is just a lack of like vision maybe for the greater show of this show meant to be a fun 10th grade, you know, fighting gods to try and save the world? Is it a meditation on like Asian culture in media and the way that has changed and updated? Or is it like a dramedy about a family going through hardship that also is experiencing some like extraordinary circumstances, right? Because those are like the three kind of vectors that we have for the show. Yep. And it's trying to balance them. And in an ideal world, you actually could balance them. If you introduced all those things moment one, and followed them and allowed them to intertwine into where all of these characters are showing up and meeting together to resolve the conflict that has been created, it works, right? But like we said, Ki-hi Kwan's character doesn't come around. Like, we never meet him in the context of the story. We just see these interviews, and he's a meme that... like, we watch the clips of his show and like the kind of racist rhetoric that exists within it to make the point that he gets to later. But our characters never meet that person. Right. And so it's a wasted opportunity. And so I wholly agree with every point that you've made.
For sure.
I want to circle back to a good that I thought about while we were talking.
Okay. Yeah. Listen.
So the benefit that I'm going to give this show, and it kind of dovetailed into our conversation about this very sweet romance that happens within the show, is that none of the characters of like the high school are presented as one-dimensional characters are so often portrayed in a lot of shows. This is not like exclusive to like just the main characters, right? But, you know, we see Jin is really trying to just fit in, right? He just wants a group of friends, right? In the same way that he would like to court this girl in his grade, right? Like, he has a couple people that he knows from previous years from his time on the soccer team, and he's just trying to fit in. And there's a fun little montage of him having to do like essentially dares and record himself doing it to kind of win his teammates' approval. And we see how his relationship with the soccer friends has kind of eroded his relationship with his kind of nerdier friend Anuj, who ends up coming around through forgiveness and through conversation and through mutual understanding, in the same way that the friends who were kind of bullying and being sort of assholes in the soccer field to him end up also realizing, you know, some of the inherent silliness of the situation, cheering them on when they think this is just a weird cosplay thing that they're laughing at, and suddenly becoming invested. Like, they're not just maniacally evil jocks, right, that we see in, like, so much media. And they're not just, like, nerdy, you know, Anuj who loves to cosplay and that kind of thing. It's a much more broad perspective and a much realer perspective on what it's like to be a 10th grader, and you have these relationships that fracture seemingly out of nowhere, and you kind of think like, oh man, what's going on? Why is this friend no longer talking to me because my other friend made fun of him that one time? Like, what's going on? But that's, I think, representational of a lot of people's struggles in high school and why high school can be kind of traumatic and horrible. And so I just like that. It adds to the ability of the show to connect to a lot of audiences, being that broad thing. But it doesn't overwrite the problems that we've been going over about, like, this is three stories overlapped on top of each other poorly.
Yeah. Going back to the thing with Anuj and with Jin trying to fit in and all of that, and how the characters aren't all one-dimensional, I really liked watching, I think it was Travis was the guy with like the slicked back hair that was on the soccer team that basically gave them all the dares and told them how things were going to go. He was the guy who at the end of the series, when they were fighting, he like got really into it. I just really liked the comparison between like you have Jin, who's this like inherently nerdy, geeky kid into manga and like silly stuff, video games, like nerdy stuff, right? He's kind of a nerd or a geek. And you have this jock. You have Jin kind of trying to fit in with the jocks in the popular crowd. And then you have the jock / popular kid who's hiding this like geekiness himself. Because he like gets super invested in like their whole play, quote unquote play, right? And he's just like, oh my God. He's like, oh, and he's just like getting super cheering, into it. And
yeah, that's exactly my point, right?
Yeah, and I also really liked that. It was like all these kids are different people when they're at home, right? That's just people. That's people. That's relatable. Everybody's hiding something from everybody, right? Like it could be as silly as like preferring or liking comic books when you feel like it's maybe geeky or nerdy and no one will like that. It could be something worse, right? Or it could be just like, you know, anything. I just thought it felt very relatable. The characters, I agree, felt very like multidimensional and relatable.
Yeah, they're just not flat. And it's like even Travis ends up asking Jin a bunch of like weird personal questions when they're about to do this like dare thing. Basically he's trying to get like ammunition to make him do dares that maybe are kind of outside of his wheelhouse, right? That's the whole point. And the last question is like, oh, are you crushing on anyone? And he illuminates that he's been crushing on this character,
Amelia.
Amelia, thank you. Has been crushing on this character, and they don't use it against him. They use everything else against him, right? And then, you know, they don't even necessarily judge him or ridicule him for liking or caring about this girl. It's not anything cruel or mean, even if we've seen like moments where these two have not gotten along. Yeah. And again, it's just like speaks to carefully well done writing of characters these age, where like they understand that there's things that you can kind of joke about and things you can't. And like he was very vulnerable, and they, you know, it's not like the last dare is like, oh, you got to get a kiss from her or something like that. And they are just torturing him. They, you know, they make him do the other stuff and it's silly. And then he ends up winning anyway. Right. Yeah. And getting the girl in the end as well. And so it's just like, I think it's worth calling out because a lot of shows, especially shows where we see a lot of like younger actors and or young, like writing for younger actors, even if the actors are there to perform well.
And writing for younger audiences. Yeah.
Yeah, just broadly, can really not give the characters enough of a dimension, right? Like they're one-dimensional. They are the flat note of they are the nerdy kid. They're the jock. They're the whatever, right? Yep. And this one is really successful at painting a multifaceted. All the characters are multifaceted. That is like 100%. My biggest plus of the whole show. Yeah. Is no character is like wholly just what we see on the tin, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, honestly, I thought this was a pretty good show.
I think we're in a pretty good agreement. I think like our, unlike, you know, times where it's just like, you know, even Renegade Nell was kind of this situation where it's like a similar thing where it's like clearly for a younger audience than is targeted between the two of us, you know, 30 something dudes, but there's stuff that is there that we really enjoyed, and I think we probably both like this show more than Renegade Nell. And I think it's a shame. Personally, I'm sad that this didn't get another season. This, to its credit, and there's a lot of similarities, reminded me a lot of The Brother's Son. I think The Brother's Son is a better show fundamentally, but I think this show has a lot of the similarities of like the noob to the world versus the professional in the world and seeking guidance from the older matriarch who both is Michelle Yeoh in both shows, which is funny. Which that's my other main bad thing. And then we can like move on to the other stuff that we talk about. But like Michelle Yeoh is kind of pretty badly underused in my opinion. She has one really fun fight sequence in her like new apartment where she's fumbling to build IKEA furniture because she's the goddess of mercy, not the person who builds IKEA furniture. But she has a really cool fight scene with like this mirror where she's trying to show the bull demon like his true self through the mirror because she's trying to convince him like his plight is stupid and wrong. And so she's basically just trying to show him himself and stop the mirror from shattering. And he's just trying to like basically break this mirror, and it's a fun, cool wire work sequence. But it's like that's the one time you really see Michelle Yeoh do anything kind of fun or interesting. And it's a bummer because she's like such a phenomenal actress and is like great in literally. She's great in the show, but she's just misused in my opinion.
Yeah, she is really underutilized and misused. I agree with that.
And it could be a limitation. I mean, she's now an older woman and she can't necessarily do some of the fight sequences that these younger characters can do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can also just use her in more clever, fun, creative ways. I think the brother-son does this really well, where like her fight scene is really brutal and it's not efficient compared to like the other characters. And this one was like trying to be the fun wireworky thing, and it's successful at that. But you're then like, if you're going to introduce us that she can do that, you want to see more of it because Michelle is great.
Oh, totally.
So
exactly,
it's just a missed opportunity. It's not like she was terrible or anything like that.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Any predictions for another season? I know we've kind of discussed a lot of it, but just like any distinct things that you'd like to note.
I think that we see, you know, I think, Well, so Wei Chen and Sun Wukong went back to heaven. They were able to stop the whole plot from happening, but Jin is the fourth scroll. Yep. And Jin's parents were kidnapped. So they're going to have to come back. Jin's got to find a way to contact them or let them know he needs help. I think that Jin is going to get immersed into the world of heaven and the mystical arts that be as he works to save his parents. He's going to get thrust into that world.
Yeah.
And I think that Wei Chen and Sun Wukong, mostly Wei Chen, I think, will then become kind of his mentor and his guide now.
Right, in, kind of flipping the script of what this previous season was.
In saving his parents. And I think we would probably see some conflict between Amelia and Jin. I mean, it's natural. He's gone. She can't hear from him. They're supposed to be hanging out. He ditches. You know, it kind of replaces how he was always ditching Wei Chen with now he's ditching Amelia because he's got to do stuff to try to save his parents or, you know, whatever.
I think very reasonable predictions and basically directly in line with what I was going to say. I think the only thing that you may or may not have said this, so don't correct me. I would like to see Jin be now in the realm of heaven for a little while. Yeah. Like he gets brought up there to do some of what you're talking about. Again, I don't know if you said that specifically. The other thing I think would be interesting is very similar. Like not only is Wei Chen a guide for Jin to kind of enter this world, but you could even introduce other wrinkles where you have a character like Amelia or Anuj or any of the other kind of secondary characters that we see become once again like important to like be something like a scroll, be the guide, be the oracle, whatever you want to do with it, where it's like, oh, now Amelia also has to be involved in this world in spite of no necessarily like heritage from it, right? You know, not she's not Asian, but, you know, like she is the source of power for Jin, right? And so they need to be close together to do, you know, you can do fun things like that.
Yeah, you can do so many
you create
creative
dissension.
Things,
exactly like you're saying, where they separate and there's tension and do they still like each other and where is Jin all the time, but he also is then suddenly reliant upon her to be able to do the things he needs to do, right?
So that's
my little addition to what you said, my coda, because I think you hit the nail on the head.
I like it. Presley, if you would, I think we're in ratings time.
I think we definitely are.
If you could recap the ratings for us and then let us know what you think.
Yeah, that would be always happy to do that. Ratings go from 0 to 5 stars. 0 stars is horrible idea. Shouldn't have even been an idea, let alone any type of show. 1 star is we got like should have been just like a single pilot, and then they didn't greenlight the pilot because it was a bad show. 2 stars is, you know, we got that one season. It wasn't a good season. Deserved to be canceled. We didn't need more of it. Maybe shouldn't have even gone that far. 3 stars is the, you know, I like the show and I kind of wish it might have gotten another season. I'm not the most invested in it, but it's also not terrible. And I think like audience to audience will find their own merit to it. So you might have enjoyed it. You might have not, based on our conversations, usually a pretty good estimation. 4 stars is certified good show that should have gotten another season. And it is bummer that it didn't. But it's not the cultural milestone that some of these shows can be. And then that is basically the 5 star is like, this is a show that it is a genuine shame, a criminal crime, as we like to say, that it was not renewed. And we want more of this show, if possible. So that's our star rating. Without further ado, Andrew, I think, you know, usually I go first. I want to hear your star rating before I go.
That's funny because I feel like I always go first. Happily, I would give this a 3.
Yeah. It is textbook 3 in my opinion.
Yeah. Like, I enjoyed this show. I liked it enough to watch another season if it came out.
Yeah.
But I'm not, like, I'm not starting a petition and
kind of clamoring for it.
Activating the masses to, like, get it re-signed or bought or picked up by another studio or something, right?
So. Yeah. I concur in every regard. It's a fun show and it's a shame. I think very similar to Brother Son, right? Like, we have a show with, like, genuinely phenomenal representation from, you know, that perspective. Fun, unique stories and great, like, visual and audio and everything. Like, all of it is, like, good on a pretty principled level that we don't get to see more of when we should be really advocating for these types of shows to keep going, even if they might not be the strongest, right? Like, who's to say in another season they couldn't find that footing a little bit better and really embrace some of the things that we're talking about that really work for the show, and then continue having shows like this that really continue on all the things that we espouse all the time, virtue of representation and good storytelling and novel storytelling. So it's a shame, but it's not good enough for a 4. I think if you took out one of the 3 subplots that we're talking about, that we talked about a bunch, it could be a 4, you know, but just doesn't quite merit it. But I think 3 is very generous and well earned.
Nice.
Yeah.
I honestly, I thought you were going to be a 4.
I was waffling for a little while. You know, and I think it just edges it out because 4s need to be, like, I don't think I'm going to go and rewatch this show. And a 4 is a rewatch territory for me where I really, you know, that was, like, the genesis of the whole podcast was, like, I like to go back and rewatch these single season shows because I really enjoyed those shows. And I think that kind of is one of my benchmarks for a 4. Like, I would go back right now and rewatch Pan Am. Right. I would go back and rewatch Brother Son. I would go back and watch Alcatraz. Right. I don't even remember I gave Alcatraz a 4. I might have given it a 3. Going back, I think you gave it a
6.
but you know what I mean? Like, you know, I need to have a desire to go back to it. And this one just doesn't really hit that note for me. I think it does a lot of really cool stuff. And again, if it had another season, I would wholeheartedly jump into it without any reservation. But alas, here we are.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, are you ready to hear the next series that we're going to watch?
I'm a little nervous because I've been on a much better streak lately than you have. And so I hope we get a good one here.
I have, in recent history, done very poorly at picking shows. And I'm incredibly aware of it.
Yeah.
That being said, I did zero research to see what the hype was around the show that
I'm going to always a good sign.
Announce here. And I have no idea if it's going to be worth watching.
Well, let's hear it. Tell her. Get me out of the suspense.
It has, first, it has on IMDb a 7.4 out of 10, which is
good.
Seized Get Degrees territory. But with ratings, it's kind of like graded on a scale. The show we're going to watch is called My Lady Jane. It's an Amazon Prime series. Very recent.
That's more of
series,
a recent. Yeah, that was in the last couple of weeks. As I mentioned, I think 2 episodes ago, this is like prime time for a lot of show cancellations, and I've been adding like almost one a day a new show to our ongoing list. I'm sure you get irritated by all the note update pings that you get from us, but and I believe I remember this one being within the last couple of days, honestly.
I mean, okay, this show was released like late June this year.
It's crazy how quick the cancellation hammer runs nowadays.
It's actually insane. They cancel
usually
shows
you'd have
so
to wait
quick.
A year or two before you'd hear if a show was canceled. You just like wouldn't get another season, and then you kind of like look it up, and then it was like, oh yeah, that show was canceled like 6 months ago, but it came out 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's like opening a bottle of wine that's meant to sit and breathe for a while to really see how it tastes, and you open it for 10 minutes and go, oh shit, we left it out, and throw it away.
Yeah,
like you don't know what that wine could have been like if you would have let it sit and drink it.
It feels so much more like market data stuff, right?
Yeah.
Rather than like actual taste, like you're saying, right? It's, you know, it's been out, you know,
literally barely.
We didn't gain 80,000 new subscribers because of the show that we put this much advertisement revenue into.
Yeah.
So we have to cancel it. Like, just, it doesn't even matter if there was any love for it. It could have been 100% on IMDb and people would have still canceled it because it's all about numbers. So I look forward to it. I know nothing about the show, and I hope our listeners look forward to the next episode of the podcast coming out in 2 weeks' time. Preemptive apology. I had made new merch for the store and had uploaded said merch to the store, and because of a hitch that I have yet to identify, did not get uploaded. So that is now, as of airing this episode, it is live on our store. I've confirmed it. We have a new tank top with our logo on it, as well as a new sticker about me talking about Alcatraz all the time, and I'm working on two other designs that are still being fleshed out. I have yet to really conclude those, but I'm excited for them to be revealed, possibly even by the next time this show comes out, because 2 weeks is a long time.
2 weeks is a
sometimes
long time.
Andrew, where can they find some of this merch that I'm talking about so avidly?
season1pod.com is our website. Find out about us, our episodes list, shows to come, as well as merch. You can find us season_1_pod on all socials. We're most active on Instagram because we're boomers, or I guess just probably millennials. I don't know anymore. And you can also find us, our subreddit is r/season1pod.
We did it.
There you have it.
We're amazing. Best podcast ever made, I'm pretty sure.
It's true.
We won that award every single year.
The best podcast you've never heard about.
Right? Is this episode 45 or 46?
Yes,
perfect. We do have some fun things. I'm not going to announce it quite yet. We're going to wait a few more episodes before we announce anything, but we got some fun stuff cooking for our it's episode 45 this is.
Yeah,
but we got some fun things cooking for episode 50. We thought it would be a fun little milestone. It's not really an anniversary of any kind, because like our anniversary I think would be in January or February of next year, but that would be
our two-year anniversary.
Yeah, we just thought it would be fun. Like, 50 is a nice round number, you know.
Yeah.
So we got some stuff cooking. We're excited about it. So get ready for that in like a month and a half, if I did my math right. But until then, I'm really excited. And until then, my name is Presley.
My name is Andrew. When we watch it, so you don't have to.